conservative,
Christian, mother, wife,
Air Force veteran,
gun rights advocate.
This is Stacy on the Right. Here's your host, Stacy Washington.
We're talking tonight about everything having to do with what's going on in our country, and who better to help us unpack these things than one of our favorites, Sergeant Betsy Brantner Smith, retired. She is coming to us from the National Police Association, NPA. Actually, it's nationalpolice.org, nationalpolice.org. Sergeant Betsy, thanks for coming on.
Hey, good evening, Stacey.
Good evening. So I know, you know, we have our greetings, and then we have to launch into this really dastardly coverage of 8 police officers shot across the country over the last week. It's an unrelenting assault on our law enforcement. What's going on?
Well, on October 12th, we had 5 drug task force officers shot in a rural property in Minnesota. These officers are working as part of a drug task force, a multi-county drug task force. I worked on a very similar task force in Northern Illinois when I was on the job. And we had a 64-year-old suspect, a guy who has prior convictions of dealing drugs and possessing controlled substances, just started shooting through the wall at these police officers at 7 in the morning when they came to serve this search warrant. This guy, his name is Carl Holmberg. He even tried to get his wife to shoot at the cops. She refused, and 3 of the officers were hospitalized. 2 of the officers were treated and released. Those 2 were shot in their body armor, in the chest, and that body armor worked. So we're incredibly thankful for that. And I want people to know that not every police officer out there, there's about 750,000 cops in this country, not every cop even owns body armor. You would think each agency buys body armor for these cops, but very often organizations like the National Police Association, we provide grants so that police officers can buy or their department can buy this expensive body armor because it does save our lives. Then we had Sergeant Kyle Dockery in Huntsville, Texas, was shot responding to a person with a weapon call, and there was indeed a person with a weapon at an apartment complex, shot Sergeant Dockery, and he was hospitalized. He is going to survive. And then, of course, we had in Philadelphia, we had 2 police officers who were just coming to work. They weren't even on duty yet. They pull into the parking garage. They see these men burglarizing vehicles. They confront them, and one of the officers, a 22-year veteran, 50 years old, dad, husband, grandpa, was shot and killed. The other was shot and hospitalized. And that was just a week after 3 other cops were shot in Northeast Philadelphia at a domestic dispute. So, Stacey, there really is a war on cops in this country. And it's been a crazy month for American law enforcement.
So you said that there are 750,000 law enforcement officers. I remember giving the statistic that there were 1 million law enforcement officers in this country before the pandemic. That was the statistic that I quoted. Oh my gosh, could that be the defund the police movement, dropping 250,000 of officers off the roll? Is that possible?
9 out of every 10 police departments is shorthanded in this country. And we have seen this in the last 3 years. Departments are absolutely bleeding police officers. And it's especially these larger, you know, urban departments, LAPD, Chicago PD, NYPD. But it's also these smaller rural departments. And I don't think most people know, because you don't really talk about it very much, but the majority of American police departments are less than 10 officers. Most police departments in this country are small, and some of them have lost police officers to the point where they have to disband. And, you know, think about this. If you're living in small town America, like where I grew up, All of a sudden you have no cops and you have to depend on the sheriff's department, who might be an hour away. And then your cops are out there with little or no backup trying to handle those same issues. And, you know, statistically, you are more likely to be killed as a rural or small town police officer than you are a big city police officer. So tough time for American law enforcement in the last 3 years sure haven't helped.
Yeah, it really is. You talked about the confrontation in Minnesota and the suspect was arrested. Now let's move to kind of our national news. We have the FBI warning of a Hamas copycat terror attack on U.S. soil. My gosh, how is that even a thing after what they did in Israel, the horror and brutality of it, that ISIS-like attack? There's a possibility of that happening here.
Well, it absolutely is. And, you know, this is something that my husband and I have been training on, this issue about radical Islam and domestic terrorism for decades. And when we were doing officer survival training post 9/11/01, of course, this was a huge issue. But when you think about it now, a great many of the police officers who are working now were kids on 9/11/01, you know, weren't on the job like a lot of us were. We have gotten away from really talking about radical Islam and jihad and what that means. And of course, a lot of that is because, you know, we have a media who, you know, they would rather talk about Islamophobia than really talking about the realities of jihad and the realities of radical Islam. And of course, as Americans, we've seen now with our own eyes the videos, the door-to-door urban combat, the explosions, the rapes, the burned bodies, all that video that's coming out of Israel. And of course, the first person, eyewitness accounts of all that. And we are being reminded, but sadly, frighteningly, we have it here in Tucson, Arizona. We've got the protests on our college campuses. And of course, we have that around the country and around the world. These pro-Hamas, pro-terror. If you're pro-Hamas, you're pro-terror. Protests and marches happening. And Christopher Wray was speaking before a group of police chiefs in San Diego, and he told them, which I will say, I was a little surprised that Christopher Wray talked about this, but he said, yeah, we have got to be ready for these, you know, idealized, radicalized, whether it's lone actors or whether it's coordinated attacks, to happen here in the United States. And this is at a time where we just got these statistics of how many special interest aliens are being either stopped or identified at the southern border from countries like Turkey and Lebanon and Afghanistan and Pakistan and Yemen and Uzbekistan. And of course, thousands from North Africa, from Muslim nations there, and we're not stopping them. We're not doing much more than giving them their new iPhone, their new clothes, and their EBT card and a plane ticket to go further into the United States. Very few are being taken into custody and sent back. So it's a frightening situation all around.
So are you saying that, because my impression was the ones we know about that have been identified, those ones are obviously being apprehended, but you're saying we actually isolate and identify someone on the terror watch list and that person is not detained?
The ones on the terror watch list are detained. However, most of these people coming over, and again, I see them every week in the airport, you can't even identify them. They don't have any identifying papers. And if you don't have them in a database with facial recognition software, they're just loose here in the United States. So do we stop a few known quote-unquote terrorists? We do, but so many we do not. And we can't sustain this pouring into our country of people from all these different countries who hate the United States, who want jihad. And again, Americans need to be refreshed that radical Islam is a philosophy of death. As Osama bin Laden famously said, you, meaning the West, revere life. We, meaning the jihadists, we revere death. And so they brought death to Israel. They're bringing death to their own people in Gaza. You know, they don't care if they're, you know, they're, remember, we're seeing and we see the video now, they're not allowing their own people to leave Gaza. And in fact, they are using them as human shields because death to them is, it's an honor. And so why not bring death to places in America, whether it's a Jewish school or a synagogue, or it's on the scale of what we saw on 9/11/01. And Stacey, these terrorists are, you know, they're not just going to attack Jews, and they're not just going to attack one part of the country, you know, New York or Washington, D.C. or whatever. They will go to rural areas. And people that are already here also become radicalized. We see this, you know, law enforcement sees this with some frequency. It's just that it's really no longer a media story, or it lasts, you know, a day on some local media, where we see these young lone wolf radicalized attackers who get a handgun and go into, you know, this synagogue or that store or whatever, to commit their version of jihad. And who's going to be dealing with it? You know, of course, our citizens, but ultimately the American law enforcement officer, who, again, is shorthanded, working overtime, days off canceled, and we just don't have enough cops to deal with it all.
Yeah, I mean, the reduction in the number of officers we have on the force nationwide, coupled with the influx of all of these new individuals, it is a very, well, it's an interesting new reality. And then you have, as you mentioned, Christopher Wray, someone who I wouldn't say he's someone I agree with on anything, yet he's actually calling it out. It's something to really think through.
Yeah, and we do appreciate that. He was talking primarily to police chiefs and police leaders, letting them know that now is the time that we have got to prepare in the same way that we did immediately post 9/11/01. You know, I was a police sergeant then, and we did everything from weapons of mass destruction training to radical Islamic information training, so that we would understand the jihadists. And of course, now we have better technology, we have better weapons, we have better and more analysis of the situation. But for the last 3 years, we've had this call to not just defund the police, but also to demilitarize us. And so what does that mean? That means taking, and you know, you saw this, you know, of course, post Ferguson, where we were told, you know, police don't need, they don't need a Bearcat vehicle. We don't need rifles. We don't need to militarize these police officers. And yet we look at those videos coming out of Israel. If you wonder why police officers and citizens need AR-15s, that's why, exactly what we saw. And we got to be better prepared, because, you know, as you said, we just had the fourth Iranian on our terror, on our United States terror watch list, was caught this weekend trying to get over the southern border here. You know, he was taken into custody, but how many more haven't been?
Yeah, the gotaways are a concern. So let's kind of talk about the preparedness for Americans when we talk about the possibility of an attack here in the United States. We're pretty soft. I say that not as a criticism of Americans. I love this country. I love our people. But we don't have routine terror attacks on the homeland. After 9/11, there was a lot of extra vigilance applied. Americans really stepped up to the plate. We had new agencies formed. I mean, it was a whole of government, whole of nation response to the terror attacks of 9/11. And so we live a different life now, post 9/11, than we did before. But we've now moved into, you know, kind of an acceptance phase. And now we have this new level of threat. And it's global, but it's also in the homeland, which we're not really used to that. So what would you say to Americans who are hearing this? They're concerned. They'd like to know how to become prepared. You mentioned gun ownership. I've been saying that for years. You know, don't be the kind of person who says, I'm afraid of guns. Go to the range, figure out what kind of gun fits you best, whether it's a shotgun or a handgun, a 9mm. There are so many different types of guns. There's a gun for every person that wants to own one. What else would you recommend to people to prepare for our newer reality?
Well, Americans own, about 60% of Americans own guns. That doesn't mean that every American trains with them. So if you're one of those people who has, your great granddad's, you know, pistol in your nightstand drawer, or maybe, you know, a few years ago, you know, during the pandemic, you bought a firearm, take it out, refamiliarize yourself with it, take it to the range, you know, train with that, get refamiliar with it. And folks need to understand that with a shortage of police officers, we want to be the ones, cops want to be the ones to come help you. But in a terror attack, that's not always realistic. So people need to be prepared, take security seriously. And then when you are out and about, and I know this sounds terribly cliche, but if you do see something that you view as suspicious, or something's happening in the apartment next door, or whatever it might be, you're going to a synagogue on Saturday and there's a car there that's giving you an uneasy feeling, say something, call 911, do something. And we have had, and this has been in our post 9/11/01 world, very often we've had these terror attacks in the United States where after the attack, people said, well, yeah, I saw these, you know, Middle Eastern guys in the apartment next door, and it looked like they were bringing in bomb-making equipment, but I didn't want to be racist. I didn't want to make assumptions, because we have to remember the 9/11, it was 19 attackers brought this nation to its knees temporarily, 19 men. The Boston Marathon bombers, two guys with some handguns, a couple of rifles, and some cooking pots and some material. So it doesn't take a lot of resources. What it takes is that jihadist ideology. So pay attention to people in your neighborhood, people in your place of work, worship, things like that, because it's not just going to be people coming through our borders. It's also going to be people who live here who are watching a lot of the media misinformation, who are being radicalized online and listening to the pro-Hamas protesters say that Israel is doing all these terrible things. And they grab a gun and go out and, you know, commit an attack. So people need to be paying attention. Then I think Americans have an obligation to speak up and say, hey, what you're saying about Hamas, what you're saying about Israel, what you're saying about Jews, hey, that's wrong. Can we have a discussion? We've got to stop, you know, hiding and worry about getting canceled and things like that. So we have a responsibility to help ourselves, to protect ourselves, to inform each other, and to contact the authorities. We talk about a lot about this with school shootings. We got to broaden our horizons again. This isn't just happening in schools and stores and things like that. And never forget that a jihadist is not afraid to die and take a lot of other people with them. So we have to go back to that alert mindset that we had on 9/12/01.
Absolutely. And so it's simply, if you have that feeling in the pit of your stomach or the hair on your arms or the back of your neck is standing up, if you feel uneasy, if you feel queasy, these are natural signals from your body that something is wrong. And so take in your surroundings and then dial 911. If they show up and it's a misfire on your part, they don't arrest you. They don't. In fact, I'll never forget, this was years and years and years ago at our old house, and I heard something hit the glass on our back door. And I was home alone. My husband was out of town on work, and the kids were upstairs asleep, and I was downstairs in the family room by myself. And I turned out the lights, and I looked outside, and I couldn't see anything. But the sound of whatever that was hitting the door, and we now think it was a branch, but at the time, I just wasn't sure. And someone had told me that there had been a break-in, not in my neighborhood, but, you know, everyone was kind of saying, you know, be vigilant, keep your eyes out. So I called 911. The officers came, they walked around the perimeter of our house, and then they came and knocked on the front door. And he said, ma'am, we haven't seen anybody. It doesn't mean there wasn't anybody here, but there isn't anybody here right now. Hand me his business card, told me to dial 911 if I heard anything again. Asked me if I was okay to stay by myself, or, you know, would I like them to come in? You know, was there anything else they could do to help me? And I said, no, I'm so ashamed because I've wasted your time. And he said, excuse me, this is my job. He said, my job is to come out and investigate and take a look. And he said, this is a great call for us. And I said, why? You didn't find anything. There's no one here. He said, exactly. He said, we'd much rather come and there's nothing wrong. And then we both cracked a smile. And I said, oh, I see what you mean. He said, yeah. So he said, if you hear another bump, call us. We'll be back here. We'll check it out. He said, we'd much rather check it out and it's nothing. But he said, no matter what, if you call us, we're going to come. And I was like, thank you. I really appreciate you coming out. And I felt sheepish because I was like, just the sound of whatever that was really shook me. And so I called them. So they don't mind coming. That's the other thing about us. We're so like worried. What if it's nothing? I don't want to be embarrassed. What if it's something and you call the police and they come out and they stop a whole bunch of people from getting killed? Let's look at it that way. So don't be afraid to call them. If you have those feelings, and I'm not talking about, you know, like on television, I'm talking about the real reaction that we have when you come across someone and they look bad, they look odd, your whole body reacts. When that happens to you, get some help in there so you can save lives. And if it's nothing, those officers are not going to hold it against you.
Now, Gavin DeBecker's excellent book called The Gift of Fear absolutely talks about trusting your gut. And we all have that. And I'm going to throw this out and say that I think women are better at it than men, of having that gut feeling, but we are worse at trusting it because we don't want to, you know, just exactly what you said. We don't want to be embarrassed. We don't want to bother somebody, all of that. And now in the days of, you know, we have, everybody's got smartphones. Everybody has a really good camera in their hand most of the time. If you see something that makes you uncomfortable, snap a picture, take a little video, and get some information to give to your local police department and say, yeah, I saw this guy. Here's his license plate number. Here's what he's doing. And again, if you feel you should call 911, do it, because American law enforcement right now, we are in a heightened state. And we would much rather, exactly what you said, have you call and have it be nothing. Because this, you know, this is very much a needle in a haystack situation. Again, we don't know who is coming into our country. And we don't know who is going to be radicalized. Remember, we have rampant mental health issues in this country. And so someone with mental health issues can be looking at, you know, Instagram or Reddit or whatever, and then, you know, Twitter, and then decide, you know, I'm going to be a jihadist. We had that post 9/11/01. And this is the perfect atmosphere for that, because we have such contention right now and so much talk and so much visibility in these pro-Hamas marches that we are seeing around the country. Just those can radicalize a lone wolf actor to go ahead and embrace that jihad, that love of death, and go ahead and go out there and die for Allah and take some Americans with them. So, you know, so again, like you said, trust your gut, trust your instinct.
Absolutely. Well, we are so glad to have had you here to share that with us, and to also buff us up so that we can actually keep our eyes, head on a swivel, eyes constantly roving around, be situationally aware. Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith, retired spokesperson for the National Police Association. The website is nationalpolice.org. Sergeant Betsy, thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me, as always, Stacey.
All right. Have a great evening. And we'll be back with more Stacey Washington on the other side. Stay there.